Chapter 24, The Food of the Dead. This hour, the air traffic above Coruscant's surface never ceased. Master Voss brought the speeder into a skylane that took them directly away from the Jedi Temple, moving fast but not too fast, and without any of the unnecessary theatrics that would trip the alerts on the traffic droids stationed at irregular intervals throughout the lower atmosphere. The wind blew Ahsoka's hood off her face, and she leaned an elbow on the side of the speeder, resting her chin against the palm of her hand as she looked out at the jewel-box lights of the buildings below them. Off in the distance, she could see the massive dome of the Senate building, lit up and occupied even now. And not far from that, the renamed Grand Army of the Republic High Command Headquarters. Ahsoka had grown up in the shadow of both, and had never given them a second thought before. It was a shock to realize that this might be the last time Ahsoka ever saw them. She drew in her breath, shivering, and leaned away from the side of the speeder, pulling the folds of her cloak around herself. She was sitting alone in the back of the speeder, with Master Voss and Captain Kenobi in the front seat, and neither of the two men seemed to have noticed her brief distress, for which she was grateful. Captain Kenobi had been quiet since they had left the temple, his distress bleeding into the Force despite his attempts to contain it. Ahsoka couldn't blame him, because she could barely believe it herself. Revan's cure? It was unthinkable. It was the closest thing to blasphemy the Jedi had. For anyone to suggest using it, for the Council to decide to do so, even for someone like Obi-Wan Kenobi. She looked up as Captain Kenobi said abruptly, "Quinn, did you just resign the order?" Master Voss blew out his cheeks. "Not in so many words," he said after a moment. "Call it a leave of absence rather than a resignation, maybe. I'm not you, Obi-Wan."
"I know that."
Captain Kenobi ran a hand over his face.
"What happened to the order, Quinn? It wasn't like this when we were younglings."
"It was a different galaxy then,"
Master Voss said. He tapped his fingers on the control yoke.
"A different order, too."
Captain Kenobi said quietly.
"Qui-Gon would have left me there."
Master Voss looked at him. "You don't know that. It's not like he ever really listened to the Council anyway."
"Oh, he did," Captain Kenobi said. "When it suited him. He wasn't as much of a rebel as he'd like to think he was. And he always listened to Yoda."
His bitterness bled into the Force, leaving a dry taste in Ahsoka's mouth, and she glanced aside, glad that she couldn't see his face.
"What Qui-Gon would or would not have done doesn't matter anymore," Master Voss said gently.
"It matters to me,"
Captain Kenobi said. He looked out at the darkened skyline, rubbing a hand across his beard, and added softly,
"How did it come to this? How did the Jedi come to this?"
Master Voss took a deep breath, settling his shoulders, and said,
"The Order and the Jedi are not the same thing."
"I know that. Believe me, Quinn. I know that."
Master Voss looked aside, dropping the speeder down to a lower level in the skylane to avoid an erratically flying Mon Cal.
"It's not just you, Obi-Wan," he said after a moment. "There's a lot going on. There has been for a while now."
"The Order has changed, Master.
Captain Kenobi, Ahsoka put in, cursing herself for the slip. She didn't know why she kept doing that. She licked her lips as Captain Kenobi twisted in his seat to look at her, his eyebrows going up inquisitively. She took a breath before continuing, thinking through her words. The Order now is different than it is in the histories, like it's supposed to be. It's hard now, and bitter. Like something happened to make it that way.
Me, Captain Kenobi said softly. Not you, Obi-Wan, Master Voss repeated. You're part of it, but I'm starting to think you're a symptom, not the disease.
Captain Kenobi frowned at him.
Oh, thanks.
Hey, Dooku left too, remember? It can't just be you. Master Voss tapped his fingers on the control yoke again, his gaze a little distant as he negotiated the air traffic with ease.
Naboo... That was a turning point, but that wasn't the start of it. It was in the making for a long time. A century ago, we would have damned the Senate and the Supreme Chancellor and gone in anyway. Who knows what the Knights of the Old Republic would have done?
The Knights of the Old Republic were not exactly without fault, Captain Kenobi said dryly.
There's a reason the Order changed.
For better or for worse? Ahsoka asked. There was a moment of silence as the two knights contemplated that. Then Captain Kenobi grimaced and said,
I need you to make a stop, Quinlan.
Obi-Wan.
Quinlan, I just found out that the High Council thinks I'm so dangerous that they'd rather psychically lobotomize me than let me live, and that the Jedi Order is on the brink of falling apart. You can do me the common courtesy of making just one stop before we get wherever we're going.
There was a sharp note in Captain Kenobi's voice that made Ahsoka look up, frowning. But all she could sense in the Force was the same distress he had been radiating since the encounter with Master T and Master Drolling in the temple.
Master Voss sighed. None of your people on Coruscant are going to know anything, Obi-Wan. The Holonet's been down for weeks. I don't even know what Dooku and the Senate are planning, and I was in the bloody temple the entire time.
Captain Kenobi raised an eyebrow, and Master Voss shook his head.
Fine. Where do you want to go?
Dex's. Ahsoka felt the speeder jerk as Master Voss started to hit the brakes, then remembered they were 2 miles up from ground level in the middle of a fast-moving sky lane.
You were running Dex?
Captain Kenobi's grin was fast and fleeting.
Nobody runs Dex, Quinn. Dex runs himself. I know he was talking to both sides. But his information's always good.
Master Voss swore.
I didn't know he was talking to the Confederacy. Fulm didn't know he was talking to the Confederacy.
Surprise, Captain Kenobi said. Although he wasn't really talking to the Confederacy. Just to me. It's not quite the same thing.
Who's Dex? Ahsoka asked, blinking at the backs of their heads.
Dex is a friend, Captain Kenobi said after a moment's thought. He deals in information. I want to find out if he's heard anything lately.
But the Holonet's been down, Ahsoka protested.
That's not going to stop him, Master Voss said.
Then swore again and swung the speeder into a different sky lane.
I can't believe he was talking to you and I didn't know.
Master Voss brought them down a few minutes later in front of a diner several levels up from what Ahsoka usually thought of as planetary ground level, though in truth it was actually more than a mile up from Coruscant's surface. The three Jedi climbed out of the speeder, pulling up the hoods of their cloaks. Despite the late hour, the diner's sign and windows were still lit, figures visible at some of the tables. Ahsoka pulled her cloak close around herself, aware of the familiar, reassuring weight of her lightsabers on her hips. But Master Voss and Captain Kenobi went forward confidently enough.
The door jangled as they went in. Ahsoka looked around immediately, taking in the Twi'lek and Weequay dock workers gathered at two tables in a corner, and a pair of Togruta dancers wearing sweatshirts over their tights sitting at the counter. But no one that looked like a real threat. The waitress leaning on the counter straightened up as they came in, her gaze flicking across them before she asked, "Get you a table?"
"We're here for the guard show omelet special, if the eggs are in,"
Captain Kenobi said. The waitress frowned a little, then leaned back toward the window in the kitchen and called, "Honey, we got eggs for the omelet special?" The biggest basilisk Ahsoka had ever seen came out from the kitchen, wiping all four of his hands clean on his apron.
"Quinlan," he said, recognizing Master Voss. "I thought you Jedi were all cooped up in..."
Captain Kenobi held the side of his hood back from his face, startling the basilisk into silence.
"Dex," he said, "can we speak in private?"
"Yeah,"
said the basilisk after a moment, looking between Kenobi and Voss.
"Yeah, I think we'd better. Come on into the back."
Captain Kenobi put his hood all the way back as soon as the door to the kitchen closed behind him, Master Voss and Ahsoka following suit. Ahsoka looked around the room, her stomach rumbling at the savory smells that filled it. The basilisk, Dex, seemed to be the only person there at the moment.
"I'm pretty sure you're supposed to be on Naboo, getting ready to go to Roxas with Queen Amidala, Obi-Wan,"
Dex said, as Captain Kenobi sat down on a stool by the empty counter.
"What's with the get-up? And the company?"
"It's a long story," Captain Kenobi said. "Suffice it to say that I haven't been on Naboo in, for save me, almost a month." He sighed, resting an elbow on the countertop and pushing his hand back through his hair.
"Your lot have something to do with this?"
Dex said to Master Voss, who grimaced.
"Yeah, we'll hold the details for now, though."
"And the get-up?"
"Not my idea," Captain Kenobi said with feeling, looking ruefully down at his Jedi robes.
"Like I said, it's a long story."
"Yeah," Dex said.
"I can see that. You all right? You look like six kinds of hell."
"I've been better.
I've been worse."
He shrugged.
"No one stabbed me or shot me this time, so I've definitely been worse.
I didn't come here to talk about myself, Dex."
"No," said the basilisk after a moment. "I didn't think you did. You want something to eat? You look like you could use it."
"We don't have the time," Master Voss said. "Thalm's waiting." Dex made a gesture of surprise.
"Oh, well, this is a story, isn't it? Should have known you wouldn't stop by just for the pleasure of my company, Obi-Wan."
"I keep telling you, Dex, you ought to relocate to Theed," Captain Kenobi said, with a faint hint of a smile.
"It would make these little get-togethers much easier." "But not half so useful."
Dex leaned back in his seat, the stool creaking under his weight.
"You know the holonet's down, right?"
"I never thought a little thing like that would stop you."
"Stop me? No. Slow me down a bit."
He shrugged.
"Government Relays and the Republic Milnet are still functioning, though. Little sluggish is all."
Captain Kenobi grimaced. "I told Padme we should find the money to set up our own relays, but the Congress thought we were overreacting. Maybe they'll agree now."
"I doubt Dooku could pull this off twice. You can hear the Commerce Guild screaming about it from all the way down here. But that might not be a bad idea."
Dex eyed him thoughtfully, then shrugged and said,
"Dooku's making a major push against the Confederacy. That's what he took the Holonet down for. Because whatever his target is, it's big enough that he didn't want even a chance of news getting out. The fleet was mustering over in the Brentel system."
"Was."
"They left about a week ago, and no, Obi-Wan, I don't know where. I know they took a couple hundred Jedi with them.
Captain Kenobi swung around to look at Master Voss.
No idea, Obi-Wan, he said.
I was a little busy with your trial. No one except the Council knew, and they weren't talking.
Anostas and Agen went with them, a couple of the others, but I don't know every Jedi in the Order. None of the counselors went, but you already knew that.
I don't know anything about it either, Ahsoka put in, making all three men look at her. She shifted a little under the attention, but went on gamely. Everyone knew it was for an invasion force, but no one knew what for.
Captain Kenobi ran a hand over his chin.
Damn, he said.
Brintal, that's on the Hidian way.
Yeah, but you can get to almost any other hyper route in the galaxy from there, give or take a few hops.
I don't know where they were headed. All I know is the government codename. Operation Frostbite.
That mean anything to you?
No, Captain Kenobi said.
Quinn? Ahsoka?
No, Master Voss said, and Ahsoka shook her head. She thought she had heard Master Plo talking about it with Master Gallia once, but couldn't remember any details.
Captain Kenobi sighed.
How large is the fleet? Who's commanding?
It's almost everything Dooku's got, or that's what I heard anyway.
And the commander...
Dex grimaced.
You ever have a run-in with a fleet officer named Wilhuff Tarkin?
Ahsoka felt the Force shiver as Captain Kenobi stilled.
Once or twice. He is commanding.
The fleet, at least. I don't know who is in command on the ground, or if he's an overall command or what.
He swore softly.
I should have killed that son of a Sarlacc when I had the chance, he said. I knew he'd cause trouble for me and mine someday. Ancestors, I hope they're not going after anyone I know.
Ahsoka saw his mouth twist. Apparently, he considered the chances of this unlikely.
I wouldn't put money on it, Dex said,
apparently having the same thought.
If the net was up, I might know more for you. I've got a few friends who run supplies for the fleet. But that's it.
That, and the Republic bought out Kamino's entire stock of clones.
I knew that already, Captain Kenobi said. I haven't been away that long. Forgive me for not knowing what cage you were rotting in this time, Dex said,
which must have been some kind of private joke, because Captain Kenobi grinned.
Suffice it to say, I'll take the Hutts over the Jedi any day, he said.
Is there anything else I should know? I think I'm going to try and stay shy of Coruscant in Republic space after this, if the circumstances allow it. So it might be a while until we can talk again.
Dex leaned back, his stool creaking under him, and scratched at his cheek with one hand.
One thing that might interest you, he said slowly. The Alliance is starting to make noise again.
The Alliance?
Master Kenobi repeated, sounding surprised. Master Voss's dark eyebrows arched up.
The only thing the Alliance can agree on are that they don't want to be part of the Confederacy or the Republic.
Rumor is that they've got someone bringing them to heel, Dex said.
No one I've heard of before. Seems like he just came out of nowhere. Fellow named Sidious.
The temperature in the kitchen dropped so quickly that even the pots boiling on the stove froze over, frost spreading across the metal countertops and climbing up the walls toward the ceiling. Ahsoka jerked a hand towards her lightsaber, her breath rolling out in a fog in front of her. Power crackled across her skin, her mantras echoing hollowly with it.
Obi-Wan?
Master Voss said quietly, spreading his hands slightly. Ahsoka could feel his own command of the Force hovering at his fingertips, coiled and ready to strike.
I've got it, Captain Kenobi said between gritted teeth.
Slowly, too slowly for Ahsoka's tastes, he began to gather the Force back beneath his skin,
the sense of his power fading from the air around them as the temperature inched back upwards. Ahsoka didn't relax again until she couldn't feel it anymore, all that head-pounding strength back where it could be contained. No wonder the council was afraid of him, she thought, as Dex got up to check on his now-thawed pots.
Obi-Wan, he said disapprovingly.
Sorry, Dex. He let out a shuddering breath, his hands flexing on his knees.
You're sure that's the name you heard?
Sidious.
You know him?
Oh, we've met, Captain Kenobi said. Ancestors, if he can actually get the Alliance to do something for a change. The Alliance couldn't even agree on Queen Amidala, Master Voss said, his gaze fixed on Captain Kenobi.
Why should they listen to this Sidious?
I don't know, Captain Kenobi said. That's what worries me. Blaster fire rattled in the distance as the gunship touched lightly down in one of the Theed Royal Palace's round courtyards. The door slid open, and white armored clone troopers ran out, making sure that the courtyard was secure before motioning Admiral Tarkin out. The dense, wet heat of a Naboo summer hit him immediately, making him frown a little in irritation. His gray naval uniform wasn't meant for the season, and he could already feel the sweat beating up on his skin. The clone troopers, at least, had internal temperature controls in their armor. More clones were stationed at regular intervals around the colonnade surrounding the courtyard. It would have been lovely at any other time, made of sand-colored square bricks with green tile on the roof, decorative flowering vines twining up some of the columns. A fountain in the center of the courtyard continued to burble cheerfully, despite the disruption, though the stylized female figure holding a tipped vase, through which water poured out into a decorative tumble of rocks, had had her head blown off, her shoulders culminating in chipped white marble. Another gunship settled down beside the first, as Tarkin stepped out onto the cobblestones, now littered with used blaster charges. Off to one side, he could see a discarded helmet that must have belonged to a Naboo royal guardsman, the stiffened synth leather neck guard torn and stained with dried blood. There was no sign of the being it had belonged to. The two Jedi Knights waiting for him beneath the colonnade came forward as a second gunship opened its doors, dispersing more clone troopers, and a human woman in shock cuffs and the uniform of a Naboo naval officer, with a Commodore's insignia on her collar. She took in the sight of the ruined courtyard with only a distracted flick of one eyelid, her wary gaze fixed on the two Jedi. "Admiral Tarkin," said Master Stas Alley, once she and her companion, a raw-boned Zabrak male named Aegon Kolar, were within speaking range. "Congratulations on your victory. I've heard that all Naboo ships have been destroyed."
"Most of the Naboo ships," Tarkin corrected. "9 of them jumped to hyperspace, including the flagship Battlestar. With the damage they sustained in the battle, I don't expect they'll get far, however."
"Were you able to decode the coordinates they were sent before they jumped away?" Tarkin set his jaw.
"Intelligence is currently engaged in attempting to do so." The decryption key that had allowed them to view the transmission sent from Glasswater House to the Naboo flagship hadn't extended to the encoded coordinates that had been sent separately on the same frequency. As far as the naval intelligence officers in the fleet had been able to determine so far, it was a new code that the Republic hadn't seen before. The only reason that Tarkin knew they were coordinates was because the handmaiden in the decrypted transmission had said so.
"Who's this?" said the second Jedi abruptly, looking at the shock-cuffed Naboo officer. "Her voice as rigid as the set of her shoulders," the officer said. "Loka, Yafande Eliza San Marano, Commodore, Royal Naboo Space Navy. 893-44271. Tarkin sighed, This kind of stubbornness in a Republic officer was admirable, but infuriating when it came from a separatist one. The second in command of the Naboo home fleet. We recovered her from one of the Naboo escape pods after the second Battlestar was destroyed. He said, off Allie's raised eyebrows. I thought that Commodore Loka might benefit from seeing what her comrades fled from. If Loka heard him, she gave no indication, her gaze fixed steadily ahead. There was a bruise on one high cheekbone, bandages down the side of her neck and on the back of one hand. Her pale green hair was coming out of its braids, and she had lost her uniform cap some time before Republic forces had picked up her escape pod. She was a small woman, easily dwarfed by the armored clone troopers surrounding her, and would have been young for her position anywhere other than Naboo. Allie and Kolar glanced at each other, but neither commented on Tarkin's decision to bring Loka here. "I want to see her before I contact the Chancellor," Tarkin said. "It isn't her," Allie insisted. "That has not yet been determined with any certainty." Kolar looked at Commodore Loka. "What about... she comes as well?" The two Jedi exchanged another unreadable look. Then Allie said, "We moved the bodies out of the throne room. There's been a morgue set up in one of the ballrooms." "Show me." Kolar began to say something, but the words were lost as another burst of blaster fire sounded suspiciously close by. Everyone tensed. The two Jedi reached for their lightsabers, but a moment later the sound repeated, moving off away from the palace grounds. "I was under the impression that the city had been secured," Tarkin remarked. "The palace in RNSF Theed City had been secured," Allie corrected. "There's house-to-house fighting in the city itself. The Naboo aren't taking this lying down, and most of them have weapons in their homes, since they're all technically in the RNSF reserves by Amidala's laws." Tarkin let his gaze slide towards Commodore Loka, and saw the corner of her mouth rise a little in something that might not ungenerously have been called a smirk. "How long until the city is fully secure?" he asked. "Some time yet," Kolar said. Allie, less diplomatic, said, "Never." Tarkin and Kolar both regarded her with some surprise. Allie folded her hands into the sleeves of her cloak and said, "The Naboo will never stop fighting. The Trade Federation learned that to their sorrow. As long as a single Jedi, clone trooper, or Republic official remains in this system, the Naboo will want them dead. They lived through one occupation. They won't take a second one lying down." "This is the Galactic Republic, Master Allie," Tarkin said. "Unlike the Trade Federation, we have a right to be here." "No, you don't," Commodore Loka said, which were the first words she had uttered besides her name, rank, and serial number since she had been taken into custody. "You don't belong here. We do." "I'm sure the Gungans would take exception to that statement," Tarkin observed. Loka's only reaction was to flick an eyelid, staring straight ahead as if she had forgotten they were there. Tarkin wondered how long that would last, and if the Republic officers that had been taken prisoner during the Battle of Gaius had done half so well. "Bring her," he ordered. They went inside, out of the wet heat of the Naboo summer, though it wasn't much better inside the palace, since the air conditioning units had either been shut down or had been damaged during the fighting. It did not bode well for the condition of the bodies, but Tarkin was pleased to find that portable units had been set up inside the makeshift morgue of the ballroom, which lessened the smell of death and rot somewhat. Bodies had been laid out in rows across the ballroom, either covered with crinkly silver space blankets were already closed up in body bags. Silvery stasis fields glowed around several of them. It was in this direction that the two Jedi led Tarkin and Commodore Loka. The Naboo woman walked with her head held high, not looking either to the right or left as she strode past the bodies of her erstwhile comrades in arms. If she recognized any of the uncovered faces, she made no sign of it. The clone trooper honor guard, watching over the stasis-encased bodies, moved back as the Jedi approached. There were almost 2 dozen of them. Handmaidens in hooded robes, Royal Advisory Council members in formal sunwear, Royal Guards in light armor. And in the back, where no casual passerby could see, a woman with her face painted white and gold tear streaks on her cheeks, her brown hair loose where it had fallen out of its pinned-up coils. A space blanket had been pulled up to her shoulders, unnecessary considering the stasis field that kept her preserved, but her face had been left exposed. Tarkin heard Commodore Loka catch her breath, but when he looked at her again, the woman's expression was carefully blank, her gaze fixed on the wall in front of her. "Well?" he asked her. "Is it Queen Amidala? I believe you're familiar with Her Royal Highness." According to their records, Yvonne Loka had been among the RNSF cadets rescued by Obi-Wan Kenobi during the occupation and spent the next 6 months in feed with the Resistance. Tarkin saw no reason to doubt the Special Operations Bureau on this. It wasn't as though the Naboo had thought they needed to lie at that point. Ali and Kola were both watching Loka as well. Tarkin didn't need the unnatural abilities of the Jedi to guess at the rapid calculations Loka was doing, clearly trying to decide whether it was better to keep saying nothing or to tell the truth. "We will discover the truth," Tarkin said when she didn't respond. "Either way, it will not go well for Naboo. It is up to you how much the people of Naboo suffer in the meantime." After a moment, Loka let out a shallow sigh, her fingers flexing in the shock cuffs as though she was longing to wrap them around his throat. "Queen Amidala lives," she said.
"Does she really?" Tarkin said. "You can tell them apart so easily. I once heard a story that even Amidala's own mother couldn't pick her out from among her decoys."
Loka didn't look at him. "The queen lives," she repeated.
"Why the blanket?" Tarkin asked Ali and Kolar. "Surely you don't fear for Her Highness's modesty under the circumstances."
He couldn't see a killing wound, but then he wouldn't have. Not unless the woman had been shot in the head. When both Jedi hesitated, he let his voice go hard.
"Remove the blanket."
"Admiral," Ali began, but Kolar gave her a warning look and she stopped. He reached inside the stasis field, the energy crackling a little around his forearm, and pulled the space blanket back. Commodore Loka let out a sharp cry, her hands flying to her mouth as her composure fled. Heads turned across the ballroom at the sound, but the attention was short-lived when it became clear that there was no immediate threat. Loka's rage was ugly on her pretty face as she turned on the Jedi, ignoring Tarkin entirely. She started to speak, then stopped, and forced her voice to stay icy calm. "So much," she said, "for the much-vaunted honor of the Jedi." "We didn't do this," Ali said, one hand on her lightsaber hilt and her gaze fixed on Loka's face. "We found her like this. Her and the rest of the Royal Advisory Council, and the guards that were stationed in the throne room." Loka's glare could have cut Durasteel. "I don't believe you," she said. "I've known Obi-Wan Kenobi for 13 years. You think I can't recognize a lightsaber wound when I see one? Even if I couldn't, what other weapon could do that?" She tipped her head at the dead woman's bisected body, her gaze flitting sideways away from it, as though she couldn't bear to look. There had been some effort made to cover her decently, even without the blanket, but the method of her death made it impossible. Her severed hands lay beside the cauterized stump of her wrist. "The Jedi do not kill without need, Commodore Loka," Kolar said. "Our orders were to take Queen Amidala alive and return her to Coruscant for trial. The other members of the government were not to be harmed." "No Jedi would do this," Ali added. Loka met her eyes and said, "The Jedi have tried to kill the Queen before. I have no reason to believe this was not another assassination attempt."
"So this is not Queen Amidala, then," Tarkin said.
Ali and Kolar both glared at him, apparently irritated by the interruption. Loka glanced at him, her expression cool, all that fury gone now, and said, "You don't seem to need my opinion, Admiral Tarkin."
"Given that there was only about a 60% chance that the genetic sample the Jedi had on record was actually Queen Amidala's, it would have been helpful. But she was right. The Republic didn't need Queen Amidala's body. They just needed one that could pass for it, even at close inspection."
Tarkin stepped close to Loka, catching her chin in his hand and turning her head to force her to look at the body. "Naboo will be brought to heel, Commodore," he said. "What remains to be seen is how many of its people will die because of their queen." The Coruscant skyline was beginning to lighten as Voss parked the speeder in the docking bay of a small, independent spaceport near the city planet's northern pole. Ahsoka vaulted out of the speeder, looking around dubiously. She had been to plenty of seedy places since she had become a Padawan, but this one really took the cake. She was pretty sure that that was a drug deal going on right in front of her. The two Weequay not even bothering to try and hide the credits and spice packets changing hands. Not far away, a pair of bored-looking Twi'leks in clothes that were skimpy even for that species were desultorily watching a clearly drunk Deveronian who seemed to be dancing with an invisible partner. Master Voss dropped a hand to her shoulder.
"Don't stare, you'll make them nervous," he said. "Come on."
"What about making me nervous?" Ahsoka said dubiously. "Are you sure this is the right place?" The spaceport sign had been graffitied over. Ahsoka had no idea what it was called or if it even had a name. It was a far cry from the clean, well-lit Galactic City spaceport that the Jedi usually flew out of if they weren't using a temple-owned starship. "Uh-huh," Master Voss said, sounding indulgent. Ahsoka glanced at Captain Kenobi to see what his reaction was, but couldn't read his expression from beneath his hood, which was pulled so far forward that his whole face was left in shadow. Reminded, Ahsoka flipped her own hood up, shaking her head slightly so that it fell forward and didn't catch on her mantras. "What about the speeder?" she asked Master Voss, as they headed toward the nearest door. "Isn't someone going to,
"Anyone who tries to steal it is going to get a hell of a surprise," Master Voss said.
He hit the door control, standing back as the door ground slowly open. Ahsoka followed him into a corridor lit by flickering lumas and covered in so much graffiti that she couldn't tell what color the walls had been originally, Captain Kenobi at her side. A sluggish MSC droid rolled slowly past them, squealing faintly at a pitch that made Ahsoka wince.
Most of the doors to the landing bays were closed, but the few that stood open displayed beat-up-looking ships decades out of date, their occupants the kind of toughs that Jedis were supposed to hunt, not just walk past. Master Voss, of course, didn't even glance at them. Ahsoka was dying to see what Captain Kenobi thought of the place, since she couldn't really sense anything from him in the Force. But when she looked at him, he didn't seem as bothered as she thought a guy who hung out with royalty should be. On the other hand, he was supposed to do the same kind of work as Master Voss did, only for the Naboo instead of the Jedi, so maybe this wasn't a far cry from some of the places he usually visited. Master Voss stopped in front of a closed door just around the curve of a corridor, next to a graphically defaced poster advertising a mixed-species burlesque show. Captain Kenobi shifted to put his back to the wall as Master Voss tapped a keycode into the security lock by the door, glancing up and down the corridor and radiating the kind of threat that Ahsoka didn't need the Force to sense. Ahsoka did the same, though she couldn't manage the same kind of presence that he could, and glared at the pair of Gamorreans that had started drifting down the hallway towards them. In at least as much as Gamorreans could drift anyway, which wasn't very. They veered off, grumbling to each other. The door slid open with a screeching sound that made Ahsoka wince. Master Voss hustled them both inside, glaring at the door until it closed again, the lock engaging. Ahsoka didn't immediately recognize the ship sitting on the landing pad, just that it was of the class that was usually known as hunter-killers. The loading ramp was down, Master Thom and Master Thrasal sitting on the end of it, talking to each other. They both stood up as Master Voss strode toward them.
"Good, you got him,"
Master Thom said, as Captain Kenobi flipped his hood back.
"You're late. Any trouble?"
"Little bit," Master Voss said, apparently content to leave it at that.
As Master Thom raised his eyebrows, he relented and added,
"We ran into Shrokti and Syndrolig on the way out. They were, persuaded to let us go."
"Violently persuaded?" Master Saw asked, a faint note of weariness in her voice.
Master Voss shook his head. "Flo talked him around. That wasn't why we were late, though."
"I'm afraid you can blame me for that," Captain Kenobi said,
tilting his head back to consider the starship before returning his gaze to the two Jedi Masters.
"I wanted to stop and check in with one of my contacts on Coruscant."
"I see," Thom said, a smile briefly quirking up the corner of his mouth. "And did Dexter have anything interesting to say?"
Master Voss made a choking sound, but Captain Kenobi just grinned back, apparently unsurprised to find that Master Thom knew exactly who he was talking about. The expression fled a moment later.
"Only if you count the rumor that there may be a Sith Lord controlling the Alliance of Sovereign Systems."
The Force hummed as the two Masters turned their attention on Captain Kenobi, who blinked but didn't fall back. Ahsoka shifted, feeling the power in the air. "A Sith Lord," Master Saw repeated, her voice soft but dangerous. Captain Kenobi squared his shoulders.
"The name that Dex heard was Darth Sidious, the being who tried to recruit me 10 years ago, the one who claimed to be Maul's master, to be controlling the Galactic Senate."
His lip curled.
"If he has turned to the Alliance since then, he has calmed down in the galaxy."
Master Saw and Master Thom exchanged a look that Ahsoka couldn't read, something unspoken passing between them. The sense of pressure in the Force eased off slightly.
"I hadn't heard this," Thom said.
"Damn Dooku's decision to take the Holonet down."
He shook his head and looked at Master Voss, who tilted his chin up.
"Stay with Obi-Wan and Queen Amidala. Keep Ayla with you, if she makes that decision. If the Sith really are running around the galaxy the way we suspected 10 years ago, it's better if none of us go anywhere alone.
What about the woman who tried to kill Yoda? Quinlan asked.
If there's a master, there has to be an apprentice,
Thome said. Leave this to us, Master Saw told Captain Kenobi, who was frowning a little. Thome and I will investigate further. If we can find conclusive proof that the Sith have returned, then even the Council will have to admit that they have allowed themselves to be misled.
The purpose of the Jedi in the galaxy is to hunt the Sith, Thome said, when Captain Kenobi looked like he was going to argue with him. If that doesn't bring the Order together, then nothing will.
That's what I'm afraid of, Captain Kenobi said. He looked down at the dirty floor, scuffing one heel against it, then took a deep breath and raised his gaze to Thome's lined face.
Masters. Master Saw reached forward with long brown fingers and laid her hand along his cheek.
None of this was your doing, Obi-Wan, she said. Don't blame yourself for the Jedi Council's errors.
Captain Kenobi, who was probably about the same age as Master Voss and Master Onduli, suddenly looked very young.
Why? He said quietly.
Master, what did I do that was so wrong that Yoda would want to do that to me?
You did nothing wrong, Obi-Wan, Master Saw said. Yoda is old. Very old. He is almost as old as the Republic itself, and he trained with those Jedis that lived through the new Sith Wars. Those few that survived the wars. Too many Jedi did not, in one way or another.
I'm not a Sith, Captain Kenobi said. Yoda knows that. I'd die before I turned to the dark side. I wouldn't have survived the trials if I had. Yoda knows that.
His voice broke on the third syllable, and he turned his head quickly to one side, but not before Ahsoka saw the gleam of tears in his eyes.
Revan's cure was the worst thing one Jedi could do to another. It hadn't been used in 1,000 years.
No, Master Saw said gently. No, Obi-Wan, you aren't, and he knows that. You made a choice based on your principles, which any Jedi ought to respect. Only what happened afterwards. What I saw in the trials. What I told Yoda.
He looked back at Master Saw and Master Thome, his gaze darting towards Master Voss and Ahsoka.
That I could still be a Jedi and not be a member of the Order.
It's possible Yoda panicked a little. Master Thome allowed.
Why me and not Dooku? Captain Kenobi spat with sudden fury, his face working.
He glanced aside again, running a hand over his face.
Dooku's loyalty to the Republic has never been in doubt, Master Saw said. Unlike mine.
And he's been under our eye for most of the past 12 years, Master Thome said.
And, well,
he was a master when he resigned, Captain Kenobi finished, shutting his eyes for a moment.
I was still a Padawan.
Yes.
Ahsoka couldn't help looking down, scuffing her feet against the floor. She had looked it up out of curiosity. The usual belief that a Padawan who left the Order was more likely to turn to the dark side than a knight or master didn't have any basis in Jedi history. The odds were about even for all three, with a slight edge towards masters who resigned, not Padawans. But those were margins of fewer than 6 individuals either way.
She looked up again in time to see Captain Kenobi shake his head and say, his voice tight,
"We left the Order within days of each other."
"Has he ever spoken to you about it?" Master Thome asked.
He tried once. I didn't want to.
Captain Kenobi pushed his hand back through his hair, his expression weary.
What now?
Master Thawne sighed.
Come inside.
Captain Kenobi looked at Master Voss in surprise as he started up the ramp, but the other knight just shrugged. They followed Master Thawne and Master Saw into the ship, Ahsoka trailing behind them.
I thought we had everything sorted,
Master Voss said warily.
You don't have someone tied up in there, do you? We weren't followed.
We were,
Master Thawne said, and Master Voss bit off a curse. Ahsoka didn't know what she was expecting when they went into the small ship's lounge, which featured a Jajarik table and a quartet of mismatched chairs, but it definitely wasn't Barriss Offee.
Barriss? She said disbelievingly, pushing past the other Jedi as the other girl jumped guiltily to her feet.
What are you doing here?
She had suggested telling Barriss about their plan to break Captain Kenobi out, but Master Plo and Master Voss had vetoed the idea almost before Ahsoka had finished speaking.
She's too much like Luminara,
Master Voss had said, and Master Plo had added,
The fewer people who are aware, the safer it will be for all of us.
Ahsoka had had to admit that they were right. Barriss would never do what they were doing. Not when it meant denying the council, walking away from the order without knowing if they would be able to return. Or at least, Ahsoka hadn't thought that she would.
There was color in Barriss's cheeks, beneath the black diamonds of her tattoos, but she squared her shoulders and crossed her arms over her chest.
I'm coming with you.
No, you aren't, Ahsoka protested, too stunned to say anything else.
You can't stop me, Barriss said.
We could,
Master Voss said meaningfully. Ahsoka glanced back over her shoulder at him, resisting the urge to defend her friend. Captain Kenobi was standing beside Master Voss, looking thoughtful.
Why do you want to come with us, Padawan Offee?
He asked her politely. Barriss shifted back on one foot, then said,
You know where my master is.
Yes.
Barriss swallowed. The council isn't looking for her. I asked Master Galia about it, if what you said was true, and she said that even if it was, and there isn't proof, that the Jedi can't look for her right now. They're too busy.
Captain Kenobi frowned a little, then glanced at Master Thawne, who nodded slightly.
The council doesn't like admitting that it's made mistakes, he said. And this was a big one.
They left my master there, Barriss said, her voice going hard for a moment. The council knows where she is, and they left. They're leaving her there because it's not convenient. I heard what you were all saying about Revan's cure and Captain Kenobi, but that's not why. I don't care about that. I care about my master.
Attachment, young one, Master Saw said gently.
Barriss shrugged. Master Koth is missing too, she pointed out, and the council isn't looking for him either. Are they?
Not as far as I'm aware,
Master Thawne said.
The council has had other concerns lately.
Barriss nodded as though her mind had been made up.
So I'm going with you, she said. I'm not on your side. I'm just going to find Master Luminara and Master Koth and bring them back.
Barriss, Ahsoka began, then stopped, not knowing what to say. She looked helplessly at the knights.
I have to, Barriss told her shoulders drooping for an instant. I can't leave her there, not if the council isn't going to do anything to help her.
They never even talked about trading Captain Kenobi for her and Master Koth, and you said that Queen Amidala would do it, she added to Captain Kenobi, who nodded.
I think I can get Padme to release them, under the circumstances, he said,
something that might have been sympathy in his eyes. He had lost his master too, Ahsoka remembered. And unlike Ahsoka, he hadn't had the option of getting Qui-Gon Jinn back. He looked at Master Voss.
I don't have any objection. Quim, it's your ship.
If you leave me behind, I'll tell everyone, Barriss said quickly.
You assume that wasn't the plan anyway, Master Thalm said.
She hesitated. Childs, if you leave now, you may not be able to return, Master Saw said gently. Are you certain that that is a possibility you are prepared for?
Barriss swallowed, her gaze darting down to study the worn floor in front of her boots.
She was as much a Jedi as any of them, Ahsoka thought, and the idea of willingly walking away from the Order had to be as terrifying to her as it was to Ahsoka.
I just want my master back, she said at last. She'll understand.
Voss ran a thumb over his lower lip. Maybe, he said. You can come, but you listen to me and Obi-Wan, okay?
Barriss nodded.
I can do that, Master Voss.
Master Thalm frowned, but all he said was, Well, it beats the other options. You'd better go. I don't know how long the Council's going to be stuck at the Executive Office, but someone will check in with the Temple sooner or later.
He studied Captain Kenobi for a moment, his expression unreadable, then added,
We'll be in touch.
Captain Kenobi swallowed.
Master.
Master Thalm put a hand on his shoulder.
What's happened isn't your fault, Obi-Wan. Don't beat yourself up over it.
His mouth quirked slightly.
Qui-Gon would be rolling over in his grave, but you can't have everything.
Qui-Gon would never have stood for this, Captain Kenobi said, with a slightly uneven note in his voice.
Master Thalm hesitated for a beat before replying.
Don't be so sure. But you aren't him, and no one expects you to be.
He squeezed Captain Kenobi's shoulder, then released him.
Thra and I will investigate this Sith Lord. Don't go after him yourself, Obi-Wan. You don't think I can take him? I think we need to know what's going on more than we want him dead right now,
Master Thalm said.
After Naboo, the Council was never able to determine how the Sith could have survived over the past millennium without us knowing. Now, we need to know. And that's what Thra and I do best.
Master, He stumbled for a moment over the words, then said helplessly,
I never meant for any of this to happen when I left the Order.
The Order has weathered worse storms than this, Obi-Wan. Master Saw said. The Jedi will endure. Never fear. Captain Kenobi bowed his head, his gaze hooded. Master Thalm turned toward Master Voss. The two men looked at each other for a moment. Then Master Thalm said,
Try not to get into any trouble. I can try, Master Voss said. I seem to recall hearing that before.
Master Voss smiled a little, but there was worry in his eyes.
May the Force be with you, Masters, Captain Kenobi said, standing back from Thrasa.
And with you, Master Thalm said, Master Saw echoing him. Master Voss and Master Kenobi went into the ship's cockpit after they had left, the ramp closing smoothly and silently. Ahsoka checked the integrity of the airlock and the shield generator out of habit, then followed them, Barriss trailing behind her. Master Voss was already in the pilot's seat, running the ship's startup sequence as the engines rumbled to life beneath them. Captain Kenobi was sitting in the co-pilot's seat, his expression troubled.
Where are we going?
He asked, as the bay doors opened above them.
Naboo? Alderaan, nearest Confederate system. Master Voss said, flicking a couple of switches. Anela's there. I want to talk to her before the council does.
Kenobi frowned a little.
I thought all the Jedi left the delegation systems after Breya seceded.
Aayla isn't exactly there in an official capacity, Master Voss said. She checked in with Thulm just before the net went down. I haven't heard from her since.
Breya's not going to be happy to hear that she's been sheltering a Jedi Knight, Captain Kenobi remarked.
Well, you can deal with the Queen, Master Voss said. That's your specialty, isn't it?
Wrong Queen, Captain Kenobi said.
But Ahsoka thought she saw him smile a little in the viewport's reflection.
Last chance for anyone to change their minds, Master Voss said,
his hands on the ship's control yoke.
Ahsoka? Barriss? Obi-Wan? You missing your cell yet?
Bite your tongue, Quinn, Captain Kenobi said comfortably. Ahsoka and Barriss glanced at each other. Then Ahsoka said, We're ready, Master Quinlan.
This time, the Queen wasn't around when Ani brought the Twi'let out of hyperspace. Instead, the Naboo Royal Guard Captain Typho was in the co-pilot's seat, with Prince Organa behind him, R2-D2 plugged into the main systems. Ani was aware that he was lucky he was being allowed to fly in at all, but apparently this time the Queen had insisted, and it wasn't like anyone was going to override her. The Starline streaking past in the viewport steadied out as the Twi'let entered real space, the bulk of a planet curving off to one side. Ani didn't recognize it immediately, which didn't mean much. This far out, it was hard to tell one planet or moon from another, and there were millions of planets in the known galaxy anyway. Ani's sensor boards lit up with contacts, though not to the alarming extent they had in Dalling, and only a few of them showing significant gunnery. He glanced down as the navigational systems, which R2 had locked him out of earlier, automatically filled in their location.
Alderaan, he said out loud.
I've never been to Alderaan before.
There's a first time for everything, said Prince Organa, taking the headset Captain Typho handed him.
Ani flipped the Twi'let's ident beacon on as the automated response came over the general frequency, receiving a confirmation from Alderaan Planetary Defense a moment later.
I don't get into the core much, he said. Too many warrants.
The prince gave him a thoughtful look, but didn't respond to that. He tapped a frequency Ani didn't recognize into the comm board, waiting for a moment before the response came up. After the wary query, Prince Organa rattled off a string of numbers and letters, receiving an acknowledgement. He stood still with one hand on the back of the co-pilot's chair as Ani eased the Twi'let in toward the planet, checking the automatic alerts for the approach vector and which lanes to avoid. There wasn't as much shipping traffic as he had expected for a big, high-profile system like Alderaan. Then he remembered that Alderaan was part of the Confederacy now, and the Republic had probably put trade injunctions on it. Here in the core, that might actually mean something. Out on the rim, that just meant more chances of making a profit. He almost jumped out of his seat when two of the contacts on his sensor boards cut close and settled in on either side of the Twi'let. Ani's sensors weren't as delicate as he would have liked them to be. All they told him was that his new friends were armed, which wasn't exactly comforting. He leaned forward to peer out the viewport, catching sight of a sleek gray and red starfighter on either side of him.
Should I be worried? He asked the prince.
They'll escort us down to the palace, Prince Organa said absently.
Palace?
Ani repeated, dismayed. Since he had the Prince Consort of Alderaan and the Queen of Naboo on board, it probably shouldn't have come as a surprise, but he had been assuming that he would dock at the main spaceport and have the royals taken off his hands.
Apparently not.
Here's our approach vector, Captain Typho said, as the comm board beeped to signal its arrival. Ani plugged it into the sublight nav computer,
glancing out the viewport again at the starfighters. The pilot on his left saw him looking and gave him a thumbs up. Ani gave her a slight wave in response, tilting the Twilight down toward the planet below. From space, Alderaan was the kind of planet he had dreamed about back on Tatooine. All blues and whites and swirls of drifting clouds. Nothing particularly spectacular by galactic standards. Not like the jungles of Felucia or the crystalline structures of Christophsis. But plenty exotic for an Outer Rim slave boy who had never been off his desert planet. Ani had seen plenty now, far more than he had ever dreamed of, 9 years old and desperate to leave Tatooine. But going somewhere new for the first time still made him grin every time, a warm flush of, "You did it, Skywalker," sweeping him from head to toe. "What are the birds called?" he asked, indicating the starfighters as he settled into the new vector, which bypassed the indicated shipping lanes and took him closer to the system defense patrol than he would have liked. From the readings he was getting, it didn't have anything on some of the planetary defense forces he'd flown past in the rim. But this was the core. What did Alderaan have to worry about? This wasn't the war-torn mid-rim or the outer rim, where the Hutts, Black Sun, and Pikes regularly fought it out both on the ground and in space. No one was going to come and blow Alderaan away. Prince Organa glanced up and smiled a little. "Y-23 Sidewinders," he said. "They're designed and manufactured in-system." "They're gorgeous," Ani said. "I'd love to get a closer look at one," he added, not very hopefully. He hadn't even gotten to look at the N1 Vipers, and they were actually on the Twilight. The one time he tried, one of the Naboo astromechs had electrocuted him. Ani took it as a personal offense. He was usually pretty good with droids. Even LB liked him, and LB didn't like anyone. If it hadn't been for R2-D2, Ani might have written it off as programming particular to Naboo. But R2 was great. Ani loved R2. It was too bad R2 seemed to be the Queen's personal droid, or Ani might have tried to lure him away. Captain Typho frowned slightly, but Prince Organa's smile didn't dim. "That could be arranged," he said. The comm board buzzed at him, and he looked back down, his brows drawing together in response to whatever he heard. Normally, everything that came through the ship's comm would have been routed through him. Ani didn't like flying when he didn't know what he was flying into, and he didn't like having secrets kept from him on his own ship. But it had been made very clear to him that he was just the driver, and that the Queen's retinue would take care of the heavy lifting. Alderaan didn't have anything like Naboo's planetary defense grid, and it was an easy approach, especially since Ani didn't have to worry about fighting other pilots' bad flying in the shipping lanes. The Sidewinders accompanied him the entire time, just visible out either side of the viewport. If nothing else, at least this job was putting Ani within breathing distance of top-of-the-line starfighters for the first time in his life. He had to loop around to the opposite side of the planet, currently rotating slowly away from the star into darkness. Still flanked by the two Sidewinders, the Twilight dropped down through Alderaan's atmosphere, past layers of cloud cover, and into a fine, rainy mist. Mountains arched up around them, white peaks spearing the clouds, and Ani caught sight of seemingly endless forests and the distant pools of deep lakes far below them. It seemed like something out of a holovid. Aldera City came almost as a surprise. Ani brought the Twilight in between two mountains, still dropping steadily down along his approach vector, and saw a glittering lake, nearly an inland sea, laid out beneath him. Islands dotted its surface, built over and urbanized. Almost dead center was a structure that had to be the palace, swooping white towers climbing upwards in imitation of the mountains surrounding the city. Following his approach vector, Ani brought the Twilight down in a smooth swoop onto the landing platform within the palace structure, the Sidewinder settling onto the path beside him. He leaned forward to start shutting the ship's systems down, flipping switches and listening to the familiar, deep rumble of the Twilight's engines fading into nothing. Looking out through the viewport, he saw the doors of the building in front of him slide open. Ani didn't recognize any of the figures who emerged, but he heard Prince Organa let out a short, sharp gasp, then turn on his heel to leave the cockpit. Ani peered forward curiously, most of his attention still on the Twilight systems. The figure in the lead was a slim, dark-haired woman in blue, clutching a shawl around her shoulders against the rain pattering down on the landing platform. The rest were mostly in some kind of uniform, except for a trio of women in rich-looking gowns. Ani had only seen her holonet broadcast once, but he was pretty sure he knew who the woman in front was. An alert sounded as the ship's main hatch opened, the loading ramp descending automatically. A moment later, Bail Organa appeared around the side of the ship, the dark-haired woman picking up her skirts to run towards him. They met halfway between the ship and the building, the prince sweeping her up in his arms. "Let me guess," Ani said to Captain Typho, who had gotten up to leave. "That's Queen Brea." "I imagine she's been worried about Prince Bail," Typho said, crossing his arms over his chest. He regarded Ani thoughtfully with his remaining eye. Ani finished the shutdown process and turned around in his seat. R2-D2 had disconnected from the consoles and was waiting by the door. He chirped as he saw Ani looking at him. "Come on," Typho said impatiently. "What, me?" Ani said, when the astromech didn't respond. "I thought I was just a pilot." "Her Royal Highness likes you for some reason. Come on." He didn't sound annoyed, just impatient. But still, Ani hesitated. "I don't think I'm exactly the type of guy you really want hanging around the Queen," he said, a little reluctantly. He liked the secondhand compliment, but what had been made very clear to him during this trip was that he was nothing like the Naboo pilots or soldiers. "That's for the Queen to decide." He raised an eyebrow. Since he obviously wasn't going to let it go anytime soon, Ani pushed out of his seat, stretching, before grabbing his jacket and shrugging it on. Going by the weather and the dress of the people on the landing platform, summer on Naboo apparently translated into late autumn on Alderaan, and Ani hated being cold. With a wary glance out the viewport, he pulled his greatcoat out of the narrow utility closet it was stuffed in, and slung it over his arm, just in case. He followed Typho out into the corridor, R2-D2 trundling along behind them. "What about the Jedi?" he asked suddenly. "If they're staying on my ship..." "They'll be transferred to Alderaani in custody," Typho said. "They're not your problem." "All right," Ani agreed, relieved. The Queen and her retinue were waiting in the main cargo holds, along with the Royal Guards and the RNSFC pilots who had accompanied them, but not the Marines who had transferred over from the Battlestar Indomitable. Ani hesitated, still feeling like he shouldn't be here. He didn't even look like he belonged, since the pilots and guards were all in uniform and the Queen's retinue was finally dressed in Naboo sunwear. Compared to them, Ani in his spacer's leathers looked like something the Queen had found lying in the gutter. "Stick with the pilots," Typho told him. "Pilot Officer Tamriel." Jaspi Tamriel turned around, straightening the wrought bronze belt buckle on her service uniform. "Sir?" "He's with you," Typho said, indicating Ani. Her eyebrows went up, and one of the other pilots made a disbelieving sound. None of them had even spoken to Ani since they had arrived on the Twilight, so he wasn't particularly impressed by them either. "Not my call," Ani told them.
Queen's orders, Typho said, then turned and walked towards Queen Amidala and her retinue.
Ani looked after him, catching sight of the queen in profile as she turned to talk to one of her handmaidens. For whatever reason, she wasn't wearing the royal face paint, which Ani liked, and she was relatively dressed down in a high-collared burgundy cape fastened over a deep gray layered gown, silver and red embroidery tracing unfamiliar patterns across her belled sleeves, left uncovered by the cape. Her dark hair was caught in a pearl-studded net at the back of her head, leaving the fine bones of her face visible. The wound over her left eye had healed to a thin white scar that she had made no attempt to hide. She must have sensed him looking at her, because she turned and saw him staring.
Ani nodded awkwardly to her, not sure how else to respond. They hadn't spoken since the twilight had arrived in Darling, but there had been something about their conversation then.
It was crazy to say, since she was the Queen of Naboo, and Ani was just a runaway slave and a smuggler. But he had thought they had a connection.
The queen smiled in acknowledgement, then looked back at her handmaidens, who were all wearing elaborately embroidered dark yellow overgowns with hooded short capes that concealed their features. The other two Jedi, Kenobi and Skywalker, were standing nearby, talking quietly to each other and a handmaiden who had to be Padme.
"Hey," Tamriel said reproachfully. "Staring's rude, especially at the queen."
"I'm not staring," Ani said automatically, pulling on the greatcoat he was still carrying and shoving his hands in the pockets, where he immediately found a spare blaster charge pack, 3 miscellaneous droid parts, and a couple of candy wrappers.
"I'm also not really sure what I'm doing here," he added, for the benefit of the pilots who were still glaring at him, a coppery-skinned human male with fluffy black hair, and a clone with 6 gold rings around the shell of each ear. The third pilot, a Mary Allen woman with black diamonds tattooed in trails down her cheeks, was inspecting her fingernails, apparently bored with the whole affair.
"Uh-huh."
Tamriel hooked her hands behind her belt buckle, thrusting back the sides of her greatcoat to do so.
"You know the others?"
Ani shook his head. He'd met a couple of the guards, but he was pretty sure the pilots wouldn't piss on him if he was on fire. Actually, saying as much was probably considered rude, though.
"Pilot Officers Dart."
That was apparently the clone. "And Ilias Nello. This is Squadron Leader Corenzim Miyake." The Mary Allen nodded to him, while the 2 pilot officers just glared. Unlike every other Mary Allen Ani had met, this one had her hair uncovered, wearing it in the same 6 tails that Tamriel was. Each tail was bound with silver rings at regular intervals, the rings patterned with geometric designs Ani didn't recognize. He wasn't paying attention when the whole group suddenly started moving, not until Tamriel jabbed him in the back with 1 hand and pushed him forward. Startled, he followed the others, staying at the back of the group of pilots with Tamriel. Ani was immediately glad that he had grabbed his greatcoat. It was raining outside, a steady, miserable drizzle rather than the downpours on Naboo, and so cold that he reached for the gloves he had tucked into his blaster belt, pulling them on with suddenly numb fingers. The pilots, used to the stifling humidity of Naboo's summer, all looked equally unhappy. The wet cold went straight to Ani's desert-bred bones. At least they weren't out in the rain long. They crossed the landing platform into the building Queen Brea and her escort had emerged from, which turned out to be a large but empty hangar. From the back of the group, Ani could just see Queen Amidala and Queen Brea embrace. Then the queen turned to a red-haired woman next to Brea and said something to her.
"Who's that?"
Ani asked Tamriel, who just shrugged. They were too far away to hear any of what was being said. After a few minutes of conversation, the queen, her handmaidens, the 2 Jedi, and Captain Typho
split off from the rest of the Naboo group, following the Alderaanian party out the back of the hangar.
Ani let out his breath, disappointed, and stuck his gloved hands back in his pockets.
For all that, he could have just stayed on the Twilight. It wasn't like having him here accomplished anything, as far as he could tell.
"I'm going back to my ship," he said, starting to turn around.
Tom Rail caught his arm.
"Captain Typho said stay with us," she said, in tones that brooked no argument.
"Why?" Ani protested. "It's not like me being here is going to do any good. I'm just the pilot. And Typho left with the Queen anyway."
"He left orders."
"Let him go," said Pilot Officer Nello. "He's just the hired help. No one cares about him. Alderaan doesn't. Naboo shouldn't either." Ani had been thinking about the same thing, but he was damned if he was going to admit it to some stuck-up pedonkey like Nello.
He crossed his arms over his chest and said,
"You saying the Queen's taste is bad?"
Everyone, even the guards who hadn't been paying attention to the argument, looked up at that.
Nello looked a little trapped. Dart took a quick step back from him, as if unwilling to associate with someone who had said the unthinkable.
"I didn't say that."
Ani grinned, knowing that the scars on his face pulled at the expression and made it anything but humorous, and for once, not caring.
"So what did you say, then? Maybe you better say it again. I don't think everyone here heard you."
"Skywalker," Tom Rail said under her breath.
"Don't..."
Nello's eyes flicked from side to side. He was definitely aware they were being watched now.
"I said, the Queen doesn't need scum like you flying her around. She's got real pilots to do that. And better ships than that rust bucket, too."
"Oh, now it was on." Ani pushed forward, Tom Rill grabbing at his arm again before he shook her off.
"Hey, vacuum jockey, you can say what you like about me, but don't you talk about my ship like that."
"What did you just call me?"
These dirt grubbers really needed to get out more, because Ani hadn't even started insulting people yet. But if they were too dumb to figure that out, then they deserved everything he slung at them.
"You heard me."
Nello took a step forward, scowling.
"Listen here, laser brain."
"Stop," said Squadron Leader Miyake.
She didn't raise her voice, but Nello ground to a halt as if she had slapped him.
She flicked her cool yellow gaze from Nello to Ani and back again.
"We're guests here. Don't embarrass the Queen."
"He doesn't care."
"Captain Skywalker doesn't want to embarrass the Queen either," Miyake said.
She raised a dark eyebrow at him.
"Do you?"
Ani shifted back onto one foot, watching her warily.
No.
"See?" she said to Nello. "Now apologize."
"To him?"
"You'll apologize to him, or I'll make you wish he'd spaced you in hyperspace," Miyake said, both her eyebrows going up.
If she had been talking to Ani in that tone, he would have apologized and confessed to every crime he had ever committed.
Ani grinned. "You are the lady," he said. "You can say what you like about me, I've heard it all before, but you leave the Twilight out of it."
Nello shook his head, looking disgusted.
"I'm sure Her Royal Highness will find some use for you."
His gaze swept Ani up and down.
"Eventually."
"I really don't care what you think," Ani said.
"She's still not going to sleep with you."
Ani swung around and punched him in the mouth. Tom Rill and Dart grabbed him before he could hit Nello again, one of the guards diving forward to pull Nello back.
Miyake rolled her eyes up at the hangar ceiling.
"Unbelievable," she said, as Ani shook off the two pilots.
"I'm fine," he snapped, holding up his hands.
"That was great, actually."
"You son of a..."
Miyake hit Nello upside the head with the flat of her hand, making him yelp in protest. "When you're in a hole, stop digging," she said. "Ancestors, you're a disgrace to Naboo."
Ani shook his head, turning away. "I'm going back to my ship," he said.
Tamriel caught his arm again.
"No, you're not. We've got company, and you're with us now."
She jerked her head to one side, and Ani turned to see two human men and a human woman, all in Alderaanian dress, approaching from the same door the queen and her entourage had left through.
"I am not one of you," Ani said, shaking out his bruised knuckles.
At least he still had a hand, which was more than he could say for the other Anakin.
"Right now you are," Tamriel said. "Maybe try not to hit anyone else. You'll make us look bad."